It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and this hour we're going to talk about the harvest and storage of late-season vegetables. With me today, Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Ajay.
Good morning, Charity.
And Richard Giron is here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And we'll also all be together tomorrow at the Field Day at the Horticulture Research Farm. It's just north of Ames, and our Field Day is from 1 to 4:30. It's a free event. It's open to the public. Tours of the farm. We'll have an apple sorting demonstration, games for the kids, Hort Day Live at 2:30. It's going to be a lot of fun. Just bring a jacket.
That's true. Yeah, maybe a rain gear too, right?
Right. But we're doing it rain or shine. So please come see us tomorrow. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's talk about those late season vegetables. And here we are. It really is starting to feel like fall and harvest season, right?
That's correct, Charity. Talking to many growers and even homeowners and listeners might be already slowly slowing down on their harvest, for example, for tomatoes and peppers, which are slowly coming to an end. But at the same time, some crops such as Brussels sprout, you know, some lettuce and spinach, those crops are also nearing the harvest, and people are getting ready to, you know, enjoy the bounty which they grew in the summer as well as the fall. So definitely it's an exciting time out there.
Yes. All right. And with all of these damp conditions, damp and cool, suddenly, does that put a little pressure on us to harvest things before things might go wrong out in the garden?
Yeah, I think listeners would have definitely enjoyed this year's summer vegetable crops, such as eggplant and tomatoes and peppers, which are slowly winding down because of the weather and the reduction in the light intensity. So definitely there's some scramble going on there to protect the plants. And, you know, the cold is coming. I think in the couple of days, we are going to hit 37, 36. So it's a preview of what is going to follow. But some certain other crops, for example, Brussels sprout and broccoli and cauliflower, which are still out there in the field, they are still growing. We still have time, about a month and a half, for them to be harvested. Another crop, which I think is certainly going to come to an end pretty soon, are the sweet potatoes. These are warm season vegetables. They love the heat, and they grew really well because there was a lot of moisture this year and good sporadic heat events as well. So many of the growers I'm talking to and some of the homeowners I spoke to are already harvesting their sweet potatoes, and they now need to get ready of how to store those crops. For example, sweet potatoes, onions, to store them properly so that they can utilize it for an extended period of time.
All right. Well, let's talk about sweet potatoes. I know that's one of your specialties. First of all, given that they're something that we can't see, how do we know when they're ready for harvest?
Usually what we tell growers and consumers who are raising these crops is go by what the cultivar has to say. For example, some standard cultivars for sweet potato are Beauregard, Covington, Evangeline. These are commonly available cultivars, and they come with a specific date or day. So mostly range from anywhere from 90 to 120 days. So if someone planted their sweet potatoes in June, so if you look at 4 months from there, so June, July, August, September, so we know, yes, they are coming to an end. It's time to harvest. And what we typically do is we would go and dig a few plants up and gauge the size of the tuberous roots. And when we see that, you know, anywhere from 60 to 80% are in the grade one or the optimum size, we determine, yes, it's time to harvest. So that's a very practical way of determining when to harvest.
All right. And when you do harvest, of course, we're not going to eat them all right away. As you were saying, we need to think about storage. So how do we store? How do we get them ready to store?
Yeah. So in the case of sweet potatoes, for longer term storage, for example, if you want to store them for 2, 3, even 6 months, you need to start thinking about curing them. And this process of curing is actually a process that helps them to get ready to be stored. So what you do is you help them to form tougher skin so that pathogens cannot invade. You help them to have the tougher skin so that there is less moisture loss. So the curing process is very critical when it comes to sweet potato. And there's a certain way you cure your sweet potatoes when you harvest. Definitely you want to make sure you remove all the dirt and the clod and try to clean up as much as possible. And after that, you put them in a room or expose them to conditions where the temperatures are higher. When I say higher, it is anywhere from 80 to 85 degrees Fahrenheit. And if we can maintain a higher relative humidity, that's anywhere from 80 to 90%. If we can keep those two conditions for about 7 to 10 days, the sweet potatoes will be cured and ready to be stored for an extended period of time.
Do they look different when they're cured? Can you tell if you were successful?
When you harvest the sweet potatoes, you will see that when you're grading them or when you're handling them, generally speaking, you will see bruises on them and the skin's peeling off, and those are causing injury. Some of these injuries are visible from outside, but there are some injuries that are internal. So when you cure them for those 7 to 10 days, you will notice that some of these bruises and injuries have formed this dark red colored, show some accumulation of dark red colored compound. And that compound is actually suberin. So when you see this dark coloration, you will also feel that the skin has tightened and thickened a little bit. You can be assured that they have cured really well.
All right. And then once they're cured, what kind of conditions do you store them in?
Yeah, once they are cured, so curing, as I indicated, is about at 85 degrees Fahrenheit for 7 to 10 days. Once they are cured, we try to store them anywhere between 50 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit. So for that, at the research station, we have the facility to maintain that within a room or a cooler. But for homeowners, as long as you move them to your basement where the temperature is roughly in that 50, 55 range, that is appropriate. We would also like to have anywhere from 50 to 60% relative humidity. We might not get exact amount, but still keeping the basement or in a cellar will maintain those conditions. So that would be a good way to store the sweet potatoes.
All right, and how long should they last under those conditions?
I would say if the basement or the cellar is dry, there's not much moisture out there, and if they were cured really well, you can easily store there from 2 to 3 months without any problem. An additional advantage when we cure the sweet potatoes is that curing process actually facilitates the synthesis of enzymes that later translate into a better flavor profile for the sweet potatoes. So the cured sweet potatoes will taste better and maybe a little bit more sweeter than the non-cured sweet potatoes.
All right. Let's talk about winter squash. That's something else a lot of us like to store for quite a while, to eat that all winter long. So when winter squash is ready to be harvested, how do we know?
So winter squash, again, I go by the seed packet of what the duration was for growth. So that's one indicator. One can always go out there at that end period. So let's say if it said 120 days or 110 days, go out there. Take a look at the skin, try to put your nail through the skin and see if it's tough. That's one way of looking at it. Sometimes, especially with the acorn squash, you will see that the portion that touches the ground, if you flip the acorn squash over, you will see some, you know, lighter coloration, yellow coloration. So that kind of shows that, yes, it's nearing maturity. You know, some of the other squashes such as Hubbard squash or butternut squash or even buttercup squash, again, it's the thickness of the skin. And you will also notice that the foliage is kind of dying down. And all those indicators taken together are a good metric to decide when to harvest.
All right. And how do you get them ready for storage?
In the case of butternut squash, acorn, buttercup squash, we would also like to cure them because, again, curing process heals all the wounds and injuries through which pathogens could enter, some of the pathogens that cause rotting in the fruit. So when we cure them, and in this case, you don't have to go as high as 85 degrees Fahrenheit. You can be roughly around 65, 70 degrees Fahrenheit, and the moisture relative humidity would be around 60, 70%, again, 7 to 10 days. That's the curing process for the squashes. And once they are cured at that 65, 70, you can store them at 50 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit.
All right. So you can put them right next to your sweet potatoes.
Yes, you can.
All right. What about some other late season produce? I mean, we've got beets that are just about ready to be harvested or ready. Anything to think about with beets?
Me and Richard were discussing this yesterday. Some other crops such as parsnips and salsify, those are out there. And again, for those also, I don't think so. Curing is needed for beet, but One thing important for the crops like, such as parsnips and salsify is that you need to let them get the first frost because that's when the flavor profile in them, you know, is elevated, especially in the case of salsify, which is like also known as oyster vegetable because it has that oyster flavor to it. You have to let it get at least one or two frost and then only you harvest. Same thing with carrots too. If you can leave your carrots out there until the first frost, you know, it will develop more sweetness in it. And same thing with Brussels sprout. I would never harvest Brussels sprout before it gets the first frost because otherwise they don't have that taste. They don't have that sweetness in them.
All right, and let's talk about salsify for just a second because it's not nearly as common as the other vegetables that you're talking about. Uh-huh. For people who are not familiar with it, what is salsify?
So in terms of morphology, it looks more like a carrot, but the root has many hairs and looks a little weird. Salsify is known or popular more for its oyster-like flavor. So it's also known as oyster vegetable crop or oyster crop. So, and you are correct, not many growers grew it. It's more of a niche. Some people who have tasted it once, they like that oyster flavor, you know, you like to grow it. Richard, do you have to add anything there?
You can actually harvest that as late as mid-November. A light frost or freeze will not harm it. It actually gets sweeter all the time. So just leave it in the ground.
All right. Perfect thing to serve at Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like. All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Ajay Nair is here, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Duran, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. And of course, you can join the program with your questions. Call us 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And come ask your questions in person tomorrow. We're going to have a field day at the Horticulture Research Farm. It's just north of Ames. The field day is from 1 to 4:30. The event is free and open to the public. We'll have tours and games for the kids and Hort Day Live starting at 2:30. You can find more information on our website at iowapublicradio.org or look for the event on Facebook as well. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at ISU. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go to the phones. Becky is on the line in Muscatine. Hi, Becky. Becky, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's your question, please?
We have a row of lilacs. They are at least 10 years old. And this year, about mid-August, they began to die or appeared to be. The leaves have turned brown. And not all of them, but the majority of them now are pretty much six. Now, I also know that lilacs are very hardy. And so I'm not totally convinced that they're really dead. So I'm wondering, what's our next step? Should we prune them? And if so, how severe? And when's our best bet to do this? Or what is our best next steps to try to resurrect this of lilacs?
I kind of agree with your tentative diagnosis. I'm not convinced they're dead, even though they may be bare. And so I would just leave them and let them leaf out next spring. And if you have certain stems that don't leaf out, then at that point, maybe in late May, I would prune those out. But I would leave the rest.
And not do anything right now.
Right. Not do a thing because I'm not sure exactly their condition yet myself. And so I'm just going to leave them. If they are dead, just leaving them isn't going to hurt anything. I want to make sure that when I prune these out, what I'm pruning out is dead. So I would probably wait till mid to late May. By then, they should be fully leafed out, flowered, and then I would cut out the dead.
Okay. May I ask another question about bridal wreath?
Sure.
I also have a row of bridal wreath, the old-fashioned
mm-hmm.
kind.
Right.
When is the best time to prune those so that they will bloom and rejuvenate?
Yeah, they typically bloom in late May, typically, around mid to late May. And you could definitely prune them like in March, early April. That will obviously affect their bloom. Okay, they won't bloom much. You can also prune those right after blooming, like in maybe early to mid-June. That should be fine, too. They are very, very tough plants. You could prune those,
okay,
in, you could prune those in mid-summer. It's not going to hurt them at all, but I'd be more inclined to do it in late winter or right after bloom.
In late winter or right after bloom. Well, thank you so much.
Either or, right.
It. Okay.
Right. Thanks a lot for your call, Becky. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Roger's up next in Windsor Heights. Hi, Roger.
Hey, good morning. I have three questions.
Okay.
A Cape Forest lily. I have one of those. I just bought it. It's a bulb. Do I treat that like an amaryllis this winter?
Cape Forest. I don't recognize that name.
Yeah, I didn't see a botanical name on it, so I can't even give you that. So, okay, well, I've got it in a pot. I'm going to treat it like an amaryllis, and we'll experiment and go
okay.
from there.
Okay.
The next, I have a dwarf red banana tree, and every winter I take it into the sun porch, and it survives, and that's about it. It gets taller every year, more spindly. I'm going to let it die, I think. But is there a bulb on the bottom? I could just cut it off and save the bulb and start it again next spring?
Basically, you would find a sucker. They tend to sucker from the base. And typically, when a banana bears fruit, that shoot then dies, and then you have a new sucker that comes up from the base. That's typically how bananas grow. So there should be some suckers at the base.
It's never borne fruit, and there's no suckers.
Right, right. They only bear fruit in ideal growing conditions. They would bear fruit, for example, we had a banana in our greenhouse. In a greenhouse environment where you have very good conditions, it's going to bear fruit. But where you have a plant that you bring outside, then bring inside, the growing conditions aren't very good, so most likely it's not going to bear fruit.
True, and not only that, it looks like trash by spring.
Okay.
It just looks awful.
So
I'm going to let it die, cut it off, and save the bottom. And if it comes up next spring, fantastic. If not, well, I'll throw it in the compost pile.
Okay, sounds good.
The third one is I have a rhododendron, not an azalea, but a real rhododendron, and I have it in a great big pot, and I don't have it in the soil. Could I put it in my garage? It might freeze in the garage, but not down to any more than 27, 28 degrees. And then when do I, if I put it in the garage, when do I want to take it in? How cold before I need to take it in?
They should be fine, I would think, outdoors until probably around Thanksgiving. Now, if the weather in November can be very erratic, but if we're having temperatures at night in the 20s or upper teens, I wouldn't worry about that.
Okay.
If it drops down to around zero, that's too cold. So
yes,
I would bring it in before it approaches zero, and I would put it in that garage. As long as the temperatures are consistently cold, let's say maybe 40s, 30s, 20s, that should be fine. Where they would
Good.
Stay dormant, the plant would stay dormant. I would check it periodically to make sure the ground is not getting dry. If it is, I'd water it. But if the temperatures are consistently cold, but not extremely cold, it should be fine.
Good. And then in the spring, put it out maybe middle of April?
I would say, yeah, early to mid-April, yes.
Perfect. Good. I've done this with figs successfully for the last 5 years. So let them drop their leaves first, throw them in the garage, keep them watered if it gets a little dry, put them out first part of April, and they've been successful.
So the cooler temperatures this fall will kind of harden off the plant. So being outside in early to mid-November is actually good for them, so they do harden off.
Perfect. Hey, I appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank
thanks a lot. Now,
much.
Roger, wait a second. Let's circle back around to the lily you were talking about earlier. I did just a quick search about it, and it's either called the forest lily or the Cape lily. So the botanical name is, and I'm going to say it wrong, I'm sure, but Velthemia bracteata.
Mm.
It's a native to South Africa. Does that help at all?
Boy, it doesn't help with me.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, me either. I knew it was South Africa, you know, and I have two Clivia miniata.
Ah.
But they're evergreen.
Right.
And I take them in and out of,
right.
out of the sun
right.
porch, and they bloom around Valentine's Day, one yellow and one orange, and they've
right.
done very well for me.
All right.
Right.
Well, they grow them at the
years.
Missouri Botanical Garden, so maybe they can help you out, Roger.
Perfect.
Thanks a lot for your
hey,
call.
Thank you. Thank you. Yep. Thank you. Bye.
All right, bye. All right, next up, we've got Elizabeth on the line in Lisbon. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling regarding when's the best time to dig up my amaryllis bulbs.
Okay.
I've done them different ways. Some years I just, they say put them in a pot and then dig up the pot, and that didn't work so well. So then I did it the other way, and then thought I had enough room, but sliced into one of them.
Oh.
So I want to make sure I get, I was able to bring it back to life, but I'm just not really sure when the best time to dig them up and store them.
Okay.
So
they're actually in the,
have them bloom later.
Yeah, so they're actually in the ground, correct? They're not in a pot, but in the,
yes,
directly in the ground. Okay.
Correct.
I would dig them, I would dig them up this weekend and bring them inside.
Okay.
It's getting cold. There is a frost warning, I think, or watch for Northeast Iowa this evening. So I would do it this weekend. I would dig them up. I would bring them inside. And I wouldn't cut back the foliage. Just leave the foliage as it is. You can kind of clean off the dirt. Bring them inside.
Okay.
And put them in a cool location where the temperature is around 50 to 55. For flower development, for flower development, they need to be in a location where the temperature is 50 to 55 for 8 weeks. That causes flower development. And so leave it there for at least 8 weeks, and then you can pot it up, water it in, put it in a warmer environment, and hopefully it's going to bloom.
Okay. Well, I have several, so hopefully they will. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks
I appreciate
a lot for your
that.
Call, Elizabeth. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. You can also send your questions to email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Joe's up next in Fredericksburg. Hi, Joe.
Good morning. I have some red leaf barberry bushes that I haven't trimmed for several years, and they're out of control now. Can I do something with those, cut back those or whatever, this fall, or do I have to wait till spring?
I would prefer to do it in late winter, early spring, like in late March, early April, before it leaves out. They tolerate pruning quite well. I tend not to prune things in the fall of the year.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call. Next, we'll go to Russ in Hancock. Hi, Russ.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
My question is, and I'm probably not going to explain this very well, but my wife and I are seeing a lot of patches of what I call pampas grass. It's some kind of an ornamental grass, but it's along the road. Nobody has planted that. And we like the looks of it, and we was wondering about how to go about maybe getting that. Can they harvest the seeds, or does that have to come from a root system or sprigs?
Well, that is a species of miscanthus. M-I-S-C-A-N-T-H-U-S. And that I regard as an invasive weed. It's a pretty plant. Some pretty plants are invasive, like purple loosestrife. And this is also invasive. So I would actually not do that. But there are some very, very nice ornamental grasses. For example, and some of these are native, like Indian grass, for example, is one, big blue stem, little blue stem. So there are some very, very nice native grasses that are also very ornamental. And I guess I would prefer those. And there are also other species of miscanthus that are not invasive. And so I would go with those that are basically not invasive.
All right, Russ, thanks a lot for your call. Let's do a few email questions here. You can call us, 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is a question from Nikki in Dubuque. I have a lot of different types of clover growing in my yard. Is now the best time to treat it, or should I wait until spring?
Fall is the best time. I would do it sometime between now and early November.
All right, here's a question from Dan. Please discuss how to harvest and ripen Bartlett pears.
Basically, what you do is you look for subtle signs of maturity, because they're not going to be soft. They're going to be hard as rocks when you harvest them. And typically with pears, there's a slight color change where they go from kind of a medium green to a light green. And also the small little spots on the actual fruit, those are lenticels. And initially they're white, but when they're mature, they're kind of a tan color. So you have these slight color changes. And so when you see that, then you believe they're mature, and then you harvest those. And if you want them to ripen, you put those at room temperature, and they should soften and mature or ripen within like a week or 10 days.
All right. And asking this question right now, he may be a little late.
He might be a little bit late on that, right? So if they actually mature on the tree, they get soft and very gritty, and they're not very palatable, unfortunately.
All right. Next year.
Next year.
All right. Here's a question from Steve in Mason City. Please advise regarding the care of perennial herbs during dormancy when kept as indoor houseplants.
Well, basically on that, you'd bring them inside and put them in a sunny window, typically. Probably keep them a little bit on the dry side, but make sure they have plenty of light. Water them well when you do water. I probably wouldn't fertilize, and hopefully they'll be okay.
All right. We'll do another question here from Earl. Are there any trees that should not be pruned after they're dormant in the winter?
I can't think of anything offhand, no.
All right. So you are in the clear.
Should be fine.
From Stephanie in Cedar Rapids, a while ago, we received a great deal of squash from a friend and diced them and froze them. I tried to use some of them some time ago, and they just turned into flavorless mush that was basically inedible. Apparently, we froze them incorrectly. Do you have any advice about that, or is there anything they can do with the remainder of the still frozen squash? I know we talked about curing them, Ajay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I would call the answer line on that because okay. They deal with food preparation and food preservation, so that's kind of their area. But I think maybe they were not prepared properly.
Yeah, so these are summer squash charity, probably?
Probably.
And sometimes, in case of tomatoes, if you see, you can, if you put them in the refrigerator, like freeze them, and if you take them out, you know how the consistency is. It's very squishy. The cells have lost their structure and the shape. So, and in the case of summer squash, it itself is a vegetable which is almost 80% to 95% water. So I feel like the freezing actually the ice crystals that formed inside would have ruptured the cells, and that's why you see the squishy mass.
Okay. So, and you suggested the answer line, Richard. So
yes.
You can just go online, look for the Iowa State University Extension answer line, and you will find it.
It's a toll-free number.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Kendra's on the line in the Quad Cities. Hello, Kendra.
Hi. I have a question. We recently put in a patio and a little bit of a retaining wall. And in the space between, I want to plant. It's mostly shady. And I would like something other than hostas. Suggestions.
Okay, how big an area would it be?
It is about 15 feet by probably about 1 foot.
Okay, so very narrow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You could put in Lily of the Valley.
Mm-hmm.
You could put in what I call creeping lily turf, which is a grass-like plant, spreads very aggressively and fills in quite nicely. You could put in maybe something like wild ginger, a native plant, which is a ground cover. You could put in maybe something like yellow archangel, which is a foliage plant, very tough.
Okay.
So those are possibilities.
Richard, what about like the ferns, some of the ferns, like ostrich fern, will they be okay in that?
It's not a very big area if it's only about 1 foot wide. You definitely could put in some ferns, but they tend to be plants that get to be like maybe 3 feet, 4 feet tall.
Oh, okay.
And they might kind of flop a little bit onto the other areas.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be an issue as far as...
Can I stake them or, support those somewhat?
You possibly could. I think if I was going to put in a fern, I might try some of the shorter ones, like the maidenhair fern, which doesn't get that big.
Super.
All right.
All right. And then one other quick question.
Well, can you, wait until after our break with that one? We are going to take a short break. We'll be back to Kendra in the Quad Cities. And, of course, you can join with your questions as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And, again, a reminder of our fun, if chilly, field day coming up tomorrow at the Iowa State University Horticulture Research Farm from 1 to 4:30. We would love to see you there. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. And let's go back to Kendra in the Quad Cities. Kendra, what's your second question?
Oh, I heard what you said about digging up the amaryllis bulbs right now. Mm-hmm. I have an elephant ear plant.
Mm-hmm.
When do I dig that up?
I would typically wait until a killing frost or freeze, and then I would go out and dig it up, remove that dead debris, and what you have basically is a structure that kind of resembles a coconut as far as this bulb-like structure. Then basically I would get some peat moss or wood shavings, vermiculite, and a container like a box. And I would bury that structure in that material and then leave it at room temperature. That's all you need.
Okay. Should I put it in the basement or just anywhere?
Anywhere with room temperatures basically would be fine, like 70 degrees.
Okay.
All right.
Super. Thanks a ton.
Thank you so much for your call. Next, let's go to Dodie in Clear Lake. Hi, Dodie.
Hi. I have a poinsettia that was beautiful last spring in the house, and I set it out in my garden. Yesterday, because of a frost advisory for tonight, I dug it up, put it in a large pot of garden soil, and have watered it. I have it right in the corner here in the garage. I'm wondering what my next steps are. I have heard about putting them in a dark room. I'd like to save it because it is so healthy. What can I do?
Well, you want to bring it indoors into the house at room temperature. And basically for it to bloom, beginning in basically now, it needs short days. And so ideally what you would do is like at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, either cover it with a cardboard box or put it in a closet, and then remove the cardboard box or take it out of the closet at 8 o'clock the next day, put it in a sunny window.
Really?
Right. And then you do this for 8 weeks in a row. Which is the hard part.
So it's an 8 to 5 plant.
it's a short day plant. And
it's
basically
like a pet.
it basically blooms in response to day length. It can detect the amount of light, day length, and then so if it has the proper thing, then it actually begins to form those flowers and the actual bracts begin to color. Without it, it just basically is a green plant. So that's what you have to do basically from now for the next 8 weeks or so. Darkness every day from 5 p.m. until 8 a.m. the next day.
Okay.
And
what
here
about
at Iowa State,
watering?
Just treat it like a normal house plant.
Okay.
But here at Iowa State, we have shades that the greenhouse crew basically places over the plants so they get the darkness. So it's something that you have to do.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, Dodie, good luck with that. Now you know why so many people just buy them.
Just buy them, yes.
I know. Well, I've wanted to try it, and this year I decided I'm going to, so I put it out, and it is gorgeous.
Yes.
It's a big green plant. It got so big. So I'm going to try it. We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, good luck, Dodie. And Richard, if she put it in a closet with a light on a timer, would that work? Would that kind of incandescent light?
It might be enough, but I would think I'd want more light than that. That may not be enough for the plant.
I'm trying to outsource it. I'm trying to. All right.
I would think that maybe if they had it in the basement and if they had some fluorescent lights and if the lights were very close to the actual plant within a few inches, and if they had a timer, they could try that.
All right. Good luck, Dodi. Let's go next to Naya in Agency. Hi, Naya.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
My question is, well, I had planted a hibiscus plant 2 years ago. Last year, it bloomed three times beautifully. This year, the hibiscus didn't come back. Something very greeny, and it had very large purple with green size peas. Now, they weren't mixed. It was purple peas and green peas on it, these little buds. And the hibiscus didn't come up this year. I don't know what it is, and I don't know what happened. Any help and ideas?
Well, I would assume the hibiscus winter killed. That would be my thought on that. They are somewhat marginally hardy here in Iowa. As far as what the other plant is, I can't say offhand. I would probably have to see maybe some photos of the plant. So if you want to do...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
I'm not sure what the other plant is offhand, but I'm assuming the hibiscus winter killed. As far as the other plant, I'm not sure what it is. I think I need some photos. And so if you want to take some photos of the actual foliage and these peas and send those to Hortline, Hortline, at iastate.edu. I can have a look at those and see if I can identify it. But I think the hibiscus winter killed.
Okay.
And you got a volunteer A volunteer came up.
Well, he's going to be evicted.
It's probably a weed, I would guess.
He didn't ask for permission, so I'm going to evict him.
Okay.
All right. Naya, thanks.
Appreciate your help.
Thanks so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Kathleen has a hibiscus question, too, in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a potted hibiscus that's absolutely gorgeous. We got it in April, and I left it in the same pot that it came in, just for plastic, one with holes in the bottom. I just brought it in and wondered if it was safe to repot it now or if that would be too much stress on it.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't, because when you're bringing it from outdoors where the environment is ideal to indoors where the environment is less favorable, that is going to cause some stress. And so repotting also causes stress, too. So I would be inclined not to do that. If you want to repot, I'd probably do so in the spring of the year.
Okay. I also have a mandevilla that I have outdoors. Is that hard to winter over in the house?
No, you can do that, too. Again, I'd bring it inside as soon as possible. It doesn't like the cool weather. It's a tropical plant. So I'd bring it inside. You might want to prune it back some. It's a vining-type plant. Put it in a sunny window. And basically, when you bring these plants inside, your objective is just to get them to survive the winter. They may not look pretty.
Okay.
They may not look pretty, okay? But if they're still alive, you can bring them outside in the spring, and they'll typically come back to life very nicely in the spring.
And I should not fertilize them indoors?
Nope, I would not. No, the only thing I would do is make sure they have plenty of sunlight, put them in a sunny window, an east window, west window, and water them when the soil surface becomes dry to the touch, but don't fertilize them because you're telling them to grow when the environment is not very favorable and they really don't want to. So,
all righty, thanks so much.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we'll go to Sharon in Johnston. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I have some plants that are outdoors that I would like to bring inside, but I don't want to bring in the extra critters, insects and such with them. So could you suggest some things that I could put on the plants before I bring them in?
You can spray them with insecticidal soap, which you can buy at most garden centers and some other retailers. But it's basically a soap solution, but it's specifically for insect control. So insecticidal soap.
Will that kill any insects that are in the soil also?
It will not, and so you may have a few sow bugs or millipedes that you see later on. But they'll typically dry up and die very quickly because they don't like the dry environment indoors.
And Sharon, okay, you can also look for some insecticides that are neem-based, which also acts as a natural insecticide. So neem-based insecticides would also be helpful.
What was that word, neem?
Neem, neem as in the neem plant, N-E-E-M.
Oh, yes. Okay, thank you.
All right, Sharon, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Rudy in Ankeny. Hi, Rudy.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got a bleeding heart plant that I put in my house about 5 years ago, and I got it from a construction site around one of my friend's houses. We had a machine that tore it all up. There was a little bit left of the plant right to my house. I'm doing great. Now I would like to take a piece of this plant back to where I got it. Is that a possibility?
What kind of plant was that again?
A bleeding heart.
A bleeding heart. Okay. And it's growing in a pot or container?
No. I got it in my yard. Okay. North side of the house.
Okay. All right. So you want to divide it and,
right,
and then...
Okay.
Plant some of that plant back at the site
that it
came from.
Okay, so these are plants that come up very early in the spring, and so one way of doing that would be to go out there as soon as you see new growth coming up out of the ground, dig it up at that point, very carefully divide it with a sharp knife and replant immediately. So you can do it at that point. That'd be the best time. So before the new growth is more than 4 inches tall, dig it up, divide it, and replant.
All right, Rudy, good luck with that. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And let's do a couple of email questions here. Here's a question from Denise in Ogden. She says, I have a nice crop of milkweed growing on the west side of my house. Should I chop the milkweed off before winter, or is it best to wait until spring?
I would typically cut it back late in the fall, like in November.
Okay, wait for the seed pods to open?
Sure, yep.
All right, here's a question from Susan. I have a young heirloom rose bush that has given a few beautiful long-stem pink fragrant roses. As the rose bush grows from year to year, it gets bigger. Will the blooms and stems also get bigger and stronger?
Well, the flowers themselves, there may be more of them, but the flower size should be about the same.
All right. And here's one from Jean. I bought a few lavender plants, and the little plant sticker says the plant is zone 5 mm-hmm. to negative 20 degrees. Will it winter over outside, or should I bring it inside a non-heated garage with a little sun?
Lavender is iffy in Iowa. Some years it does perfectly fine over winters very nicely, other winters not so. It definitely needs a well-drained soil. It hates wet soils, especially wet soils in wintertime. So it has to be a well-drained site. I'd be inclined to put it in the ground right now and hope for the best.
All right. And we do run into some beautiful lavender in
Absolutely.
Iowa. And then
some years in spring after a hard winter, it's gone. It's dead. So.
All right, so you're just playing the lavender lottery.
It's not as reliable as peonies, definitely not.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Pam is on the line in Walford. Hi, Pam.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a Japanese beetle question. I have a small flower garden that I plant, just annuals, and I've got a few perennials. And last year I did, not this past summer, but the summer before, I did nothing, and they practically defoliated my flowers. This summer I spent the whole summer emptying bags full of beetles to try to get rid of them using the bag
mm-hmm.
method. And they still went to my flowers and made significant damage on my flowers. I don't really want to spray because I have pollinators there, both bumblebees and honeybees, and I have hummingbirds. Is there anything else I can do to not have this damage? And do I need to treat my grass with they've laid eggs in the areas where the bag stands were placed?
Right. Well, the Japanese beetle traps, they really don't work.
So the good news is that you don't have to empty any
yes,
more bags.
Those stinky old bags. Mm-hmm. The Japanese beetle traps tend to attract more beetles to the area than they catch. So you end up with more than you would have had otherwise. So that doesn't typically work. As far as basically treating them. The problem is that most insecticides that you might use, and they can be controlled with insecticides, many of those have a very short residual period where they might be effective for maybe 3 or 4 days, and then you have to spray again. And they're typically present in the garden from late June until maybe mid to late August. That's a long time frame. That's a lot of spraying. So that's not very practical. As far as treating the ground, yes, the females lay their eggs in grassy areas, and then the eggs hatch and you have these grubs. But even if you treat your lawn, you're not going to affect the population the next year. And that's because your lawn is just a small speck in the overall landscape. And these insects are coming from grassy areas like the neighbor's yard, roadside ditches, playgrounds, all these grassy areas nearby. And so your lawn is just a small area. It doesn't affect the population, unfortunately.
So you're saying there's nothing she can do?
Well, she might want to go online and look for plants that they don't like. They don't like everything, okay? And I would be inclined to plant those plants that they don't prefer.
All right. And you might get luckier next year. I mean,
right.
The population
will fluctuate from year to year. The weather basically is the main factor on that. And so some years they may be very bad, other years not nearly as bad.
All right, Pam, I'm sorry. Japanese beetle questions never have a happy ending. and they're not going to stop coming either. So
no.
let's do a question from Janelle in Windsor, Illinois. She says, I planted a pussy willow close to black walnut trees last fall. In the spring, it came up beautifully. It lasted most of the summer. In August, it started to show signs of wilting. Now new little sprouts are coming up, but I'm worried that the juglone from the walnut trees might be killing it. Can I transplant it now?
I would prefer to do that early in the spring when it's basically dormant. You typically don't want to transplant a woody plant when it's actually in leaf. And so you possibly could do it this fall after leaf drop, but I would prefer early spring before leaf break.
All right, and let's circle around to where we started. This is from Julie in Des Moines. How do you store beets for the winter?
So beets, I have been getting a few questions about beets and the flavor profile in them and how tasty they are, if they are grown properly in a soil which has enough nitrogen. So in the case of beets, once we harvest, they quickly lose moisture because they don't have a hard skin. So if you can keep them in a cooler area, again in a cellar, with a high relative humidity, that's the best we can do.
All right, and it's a reason a lot of people can beets, right?
That's true. Canning is also a great way to save some of these vegetables, which we love to eat.
All right, Ajay Nair and Richard Giron, thank you both so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Charity.
This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.